call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Friday, the 7th of April. Speaking about sisters, it's my youngest sister's birthday. Senator Kelly is here with us.
Hello.
Senator Costello, Senator Wilikowski, and Chairman Coghill. And today what we're going to do is four things. We're going to do some confirmation hearings on the State Commission on Human Rights, the Alaska Police Standards Council. We'll have Chief Johnson here. Will and Granger with the Board of Governors of the Bar. We're going to bring up a CS for Senate Bill 15. I'm hoping that we can dispatch that. And we're going to introduce Senate Bill 100, Senator Egan. And then we're going to have public testimony on House Bill 106, which is the Civil Legal Services Fund. And I'm going to propose amendments on Monday. And so I would alert everybody to that. So with that, we have Chief Bryce Johnson here in the room with us, and since he is on duty and suited up, ready to go, let's go ahead and have him come up. He's an appointee to the Alaska Police Standards Council. I was in the State Affairs Committee when he came and testified. Welcome, Senator Meyer, and welcome, Chief Bryce Johnson. And your willingness and your credibility on serving on the Police Standards Council to me is unquestioned, but I still think introduce yourself. We'll see if there's members' questions, and we'll go from there. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Senator. I'm Bryce Johnson. I've been in law enforcement for a little over 24 years, last 4 years as Chief of the Juvenile Police Department. I care deeply about my profession and have watched it be a challenge over the last many years, some of it self-inflicted and some not. And so I very much appreciate being able to serve on the Police Standards Council. We take our job very seriously because we care deeply about our profession and we want to make sure that we protect it. So thank you for having me here.
And since I get to ask questions, the last committee that you were in, I will forego those, but only just to say thank you for your willingness to serve and for the service that you've already done for Alaska and your community.
Thank you.
So you've seen his credentials and his appointment. Is there questions for the chief at this point for any discussion on his appointment? Man, this is too easy. Must be after lunch.
Must be. And there's donuts there, I see.
That's what I say. That's what I say every meeting. Yeah, the sugar buzz. Chief, I want to thank you for being willing to be the conscience for the police force. I know you get to hire them, you get to manage them, and now you get to look over them in a whole new way. And for somebody who not only knows the practical playing out of a day-by-day operation, but also the code of conduct, I think it's very important. So you have our deepest appreciation. And at this point, unless you have any statements you want to make, I will release you to your duties.
You have a busy agenda, so I thank you and have a good day.
Thank you very much for coming before us. And my apologies for making you have to wait a few minutes. We're going to go then now to the Alaska Bar Association, which William Granger has been appointed to. And he is in Anchorage. And hopefully he's on the phone with us. So, Mr. Granger, are you there?
I am, sir. Thank you.
Put yourself on the record and give us your testimony about your willingness to serve and any experience you have with the Alaska Bar Association.
I'm sure. My name is William Granger. I'm a long-time Alaska resident, a banker by profession. I have previously served on the Alaska Bar Association Board of Governors. I think about 12 years, I'm pleased to have done that and appreciate the opportunity to continue that service. Most of my participation as a public member of the Board of Governors has been as treasurer, and I believe that the financial condition of the organization and its steadfast ability and desire to maintain a budget is been pretty well demonstrated, and I'm very pleased about that. So I'm pleased to serve again, if that's your wish. Thank you.
As the head of the Judiciary Committee, I am not a lawyer, and we do have a lawyer that sits on the committee, for which I'm grateful. But what are some of the things that the association looks at for either credentialing or management of the actual association?
Well, the Board of Governors provides oversight to the executive management of the organization. Deborah O'Regan is the executive director. They have a long-time treasurer and bar counsel and a couple of assistant bar counsels, among other staff members. But the Board of Governors provides the general oversight and direction as to how it functions. Of course, we're governed beyond that by the Alaska Supreme Court. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
That to help me get the context, what I'm going to have to do is probably find my way to have one of the days where I can show up at one of your public meetings and just kind of watch you in action. So,
well, that would be wonderful. Other than some executive sessions, I believe all of our meetings are open to the public, and every meeting, of course, contains some element of a public testimony ability to it. So if one chooses to do that, they can testify as well.
So for somebody with a financial background, my guess is you keep them pretty squeaky tight. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Questions for Mr. Granger? Mr. Granger, thank you for taking the time to call in. It looks like there is going to be no questions at this point. And so we will move your name together with Mr. Johnson's name to the full body for a recommendation. So thank you very much for taking time out of your life to at least call in and be prepared for questions. Thank you very much, and I'll release you unless you have something else you want to add.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Fairbanks, and we have Drew Phoenix, who wants to be a part of the Commission for Human Rights. And so, Drew, put yourself on the record, give us your testimony, your desire to serve on the commission, and anything that you think might help us appreciate your willingness to work.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with all of you. It's an honor and a privilege to be considered for the Human Rights Commission. I have lived in Alaska for 9 years, most of that time in Anchorage, but most recently moved to Fairbanks to live with my wife, I'm newly married, a wife and our two teenage children, and have my passion and my experience in education have all centered in human rights, civil rights. Over the last 9 years, I've worked in a variety of nonprofits here, as I said, mostly in Anchorage, working in the area of civil rights. And I'm a firm believer that, the better able we are to eliminate any threat of discrimination for individuals, the better off our entire state will be in terms of peace and safety and economic and healthy well-being. So I see its benefit to the individual and also to our state as a whole. And I very much love Alaska, and my family and I intend on staying here a long time. So I'm really honored to be able to use my expertise in diversity management on behalf of the Human Rights Commission, and hope I can do that.
Well, first of all, thank you for your willingness to serve. Congratulations on your newest relationship. And so for me, a couple of questions, and looking at your resume, what are some of the things that you've been an advocate for that on your resume you said that you were an advocate? What are some of those things that I think I remember seeing somewhere that you had worked with the ACLU, so that's a pretty strong advocacy group. Which always gets my attention. So what are some of the things that you have pushed forward on?
Yes, I worked at the ACLU of Alaska Foundation for 4 years in various capacities, most recently the Director of Development and Communications. And it was my primary responsibility to coordinate the analysis and then education to the public of various civil rights issues before us. And some of those involved workplace discrimination, violations of ADA compliance as it relates to people living with disabilities, voting rights was an issue while I was there, and those are sort of the three that are sort of top of mind as I recall my work. And then later, most recently, I was the executive director of Identity for 3 years. And Identity is your statewide lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender nonprofit doing education, advocacy, and community support. So between those two organizations, I've worked very much in depth with all kinds of civil rights, human rights issues.
Thank you, and I think most of us down here really want individuals to be treated openly and fairly, and it sounds like that's been a goal of yours. But in the gender identity world, you certainly, I think if that's what you're referring to with the gay and lesbian work, that seems to be the hot button issue right now. Is that something that you worked in?
I don't focus on that primarily right now. Since I left Identity, I left in September and moved up here to Fairbanks full-time. I'm concerned, and my role, of course, in the Human Rights Commission is with all Alaskans in all areas as it pertains to our law, Human Rights Law 1880, which does include sex, but of course that's not been interpreted yet to include certain things that I worked for in my role at Identity. So really focused on race, sex, religion, national origin, ability, disability, age, and so forth. And those are our primary, the primary concerns then with Human Rights Law 1880.
And that was kind of where I was getting at, Drew, and that is the advocacy in one arena, and we all have to deal with this, and that is we advocate because we care so deeply. And yet when we get into a public body, we have to look at the law and try to apply it as evenly as we can. And I think probably because some of the differences I've had with the very group that you advocated with, I could see some real tension there. And, you know, I just when reading your biography, it just got my attention up a little bit. Do you think that you'd be able to be pretty even-handed with those? For example, I'm a Christian. The persuasion I carry is very different than probably some that you carry, but could we agree to work through the law on those particular areas? That's what I'm looking for.
My role as a commissioner is to enforce the human rights law as it exists, 1880, and I will do that faithfully and objectively and impartially to the best of my ability. I think I'll do a very good job at that. And what I bring is just my wealth of experience in civil rights broadly, which encompasses all kinds of things, as I mentioned, in my work, especially at ACLU of Alaska.
Other questions for Senator Kelly? You have a question?
Senator Kelly, thank you. And since you brought up ACLU, I just have a couple of questions. The ACLU of Alaska sued to overturn a law passed by the people through the initiative process in 2010, and it provided that a parent had to be notified before an abortion could be performed on their minor daughter. And I just want to know if the candidate supported ACLU's position on that?
It wasn't my decision to, their pursuit, the ACLU's pursuit of that particular item was done as an organization, and my opinions and vantage points are separate from that, and I'm here to uphold and enforce the human rights law as it pertains to discrimination areas of employment, public accommodations, finance and credit, And I will absolutely do that in keeping with the law.
Well, if you don't, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, I'm just asking whether you supported ACLU. You're associated with ACLU. I just want to know if you supported their position on that or not.
I'm sorry, supported the issue on what?
Do you support ACLU's position on that or not? Is that was just the question.
Right. Is that what you're asking me?
Correct. Did you support the ACLU's position on the initiative that I just described? Against the initiative I described?
Well, well, respectfully, I'm not sure how it pertains to this position, but I'm happy to share.
Well, it's, you're not being asked.
That personally, I do support a woman's right to choose.
Well, that wasn't the
and
question.
And to have the kind of reproductive care she needs.
Well, that just wasn't the question. And whether it pertains to it or not, you're not being asked to vote on or to support a specific issue. What you're asking is for people who are either going to vote for you or not for your confirmation. And you're going to be in a position that's going to be dealing with these kinds of things, even though maybe not this specifically. And I'd kind of like to know your predisposition in these issues. So did you support the ACLU's position in that matter or not? And since we've talked so much about it, let me just restate it. It was the initiative. It was passed in 2010, and it provided that a parent had to be notified before an abortion could be formed on a minor daughter. And the ACLU opposed the initiative. Do you suppose that oppose that initiative?
That was early on when I first started working there. And so I guess I'm struggling with the question because it really didn't pertain to me. I just started working there.
Okay.
I'd have to look over it again to really read it thoroughly to be able to give you
I'll go to the next one. I have a question about the ACLU's similar ACLU question. ACLU of Alaska was one of those plaintiffs who sued to overturn a law passed by the legislature that sought to limit public funding for abortion only to those cases for which it was medically necessary. Were you in support of the ACLU's position on that or against it?
Yes, I was in support of it.
Okay, thank you. I have a little more.
Mr. Senator Kelly.
This is ACLU National. Again, it pertains to the kinds of issues that will come before you. ACLU filed a complaint against the Catholic Hospital in Michigan, and they argued that the Catholic Hospital engaged in sex discrimination because of their refusal to perform sterilization procedures. And I'd just like to know what your view, if a religious health care provider can refuse to provide abortions or sterilization procedures if the health care provider, is the health care provider in this case guilty of sex discrimination if they choose not to do that?
I guess I would respond by saying that whatever, if something like that were to come before the Human Rights Commission, of course, we have attorneys that would need to interpret how the current Human Rights Law 1880 pertains, how it we would interpret that. We would have to go on their expertise to give an objective, impartial response as a commissioner. If it were to come to the point where we had a hearing as commissioners, I would need to hear all of the legal background to it and make a very objective decision about it.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Kelly?
One of the things I'm struggling with isn't necessarily this candidate. It's the Human Rights Commission that seems to want to get out of the bounds that are created for it by the statutes that we have written. And it seems that the ACLU often comes to their aid in that. And so I'm just trying to figure out here, are we going to add another person to the commission that maybe has views that are opposed to what the statute is and is willing to go through other means to achieve those ends? And again, if I can go off the candidate's position right now, the commission has said things like someone you and I know, the chair of the commission, has said, talked about the beauty of it all, that they don't have to come to the legislature on these kinds of issues because of federal cases and those kinds of things. So there, it seems they're planning to usurp the legislature's authority. And I just want to know if we're going to add another person to the Human Rights Commission that holds views that are out of step with the rest of Alaska. And I think actually the candidate here had a quote that was talking about how we're seeing things that the commission could get back in being in step with Alaska as times are changing. But the fact is that Alaska has voted a number of times on these kinds of issues, the kind that would come before the Human Rights Commission. They have consistently voted conservatively, and they are not moving to the left, and yet the commission seems to be moving to the left, and that's what I'm afraid of. So as we go forward, I have some real questions about this candidate, and I want to know more. With that in mind, if we could hold it just a few more days, and rather than grill the candidate on the record, I'd like to send the candidate some questions,
sure.
Have them respond to it, and then it can be just part of the public record, but I don't want to put them on the spot right now.
Drew, you've heard the comment. I, at least at this point, I should give you the liberty to place some comment on it, and then maybe we can have a further conversation. I'll give you a chance to respond now, and then I have Senator Wilkowski has a question.
Okay, sure. And I would be more than happy to respond to written questions sent to me. I just want to reiterate that I am being asked as a commissioner to enforce the current law, and I would do that to the best of my ability with all objectivity and impartiality. And I just wanted to reiterate that.
Thank you very much. I think that was very clear. And so we'll go from there. Senator Wilkowski, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little perplexed by the previous line of questioning. This is the Alaska Human Rights Commission. It has nothing to do with abortion. The individual's private views on that subject are completely irrelevant and, quite frankly, border on the verge of violating his constitutional rights to privacy. It's offensive. And I should point out that the two cases that were mentioned, two Supreme Court cases that were mentioned, one was on parental notification, which, by the way, was upheld. The Supreme Court reversed that. The second one was on public funding for abortions, which, by the way, the Supreme Court reversed that as well. So the position that the that Drew Phoenix has taken, or his organization has taken, which he hasn't worked in 4 years, is a position that the Alaska Supreme Court agreed with. So I want someone on the Human Rights Commission that is understands the law, that is advocating for justice and human rights. And I don't care what his personal views are on these highly controversial issues that have absolutely nothing to do with his ability to perform his functions as a commissioner on the Human Rights Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Just in response to that, I've been on this committee for a long, long time, and I've heard you and many others ask people deeply about their personal views on things, only to find out how they would serve in a committee. So,
never on abortion, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. And so, Senator Kelly.
To somehow pose that to question a person sitting for a commission on their views on controversial issues is somehow a violation of their constitutional rights is absurd. Second of all, these are exactly the kinds of issues that are going to come before the Human Rights Commission. In 1996, we had to deal with the providing of health care by the university for basically the boyfriends and girlfriends of their employees. It came before the Human Rights Commission. The Human Rights Commission took a huge step out of line, said that it was okay to do that, and we had a judge who supported them in that. We had to write a law in the legislature to clarify something that was already quite clear. And I want to, rather than put this person through the rigors of a committee questioning on issues that are personal, I want to give that person a right to just respond in paper so that these kinds of issues aren't too probing for an individual that's just trying to come to the state of Alaska and do a job, which I respect.
And Drew, you can see that this creates no small debate in Alaska, as many things do when it comes to civil rights, and you've been an advocate, so you understand the passion. Senator Meyer has a question, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, Drew, is that it appears like you have a degree in theology and was a minister for most of your life. Why did you stop that profession? And then you went from there to the Community Action on Toxics, ACLU, and then Identity, Inc. So it seems like that's quite a change. Were you just looking for a change, or?
Thank you for that question. I was a minister, ordained minister. I still am an ordained minister in the United Methodist Church. I just no longer serve local churches, but I'm still ordained. I was a minister for various churches in Baltimore and the D.C. area for over 20 years, and that's a good long time, and loved it, and left loving it, but was ready for a change, and at the same time had been to Alaska, and I don't know if this happened for any of you on the committee, but I visited Alaska with a work team from the United Methodist Church to do some things out in Soldotna, to do some renovation work at a church, and I fell in love instantly with Alaska. And that desire did not go away. And then returning to Baltimore, to my ministry, my job at the time, it never went away. And I decided that I must move to Alaska. I just loved it so deeply. And decided to use my master's degree in management and my experience in management as an executive director, a minister of a church, in a different sector. And so I heard about an opening in the environmental arena at Alaska Community Action on Toxics and applied and was hired to do that management job. So it's been my joy over the years to use my management education and experience in different sectors, because it can be applied across the board no matter what the sector. And that's, it's my love, so that's what I'll continue to do.
Yeah, no, I thank you, Drew. Mr. Chairman, I think that's happened to a lot of us, that we come up here for a short period and then we end up living our lives here, because it's so,
yeah.
Alaska does that to a person. And you might have said this and I missed it. So you left Anchorage in fall of 2016 and you're now in Fairbanks. What are you doing in Fairbanks?
My wife, who is professor of School of Management at UAF, she and I opened a diversity management consulting firm, and at the same time, I have been homeschooling our 14-year-old, who, as is common among some young people, does not fit kind of the traditional classroom, that he doesn't excel in that kind of environment, so I've been homeschooling him. And at the same time, interviewing for some more permanent positions up here in Fairbanks. And I'm not at liberty to say, but have been offered a position up here. So we're done with the homeschooling for now, and we're excited he's going to be entering Hutchison High School in the fall. And so I will set aside the consulting business and hopefully take up a full-time position at an agency here in Fairbanks.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Drew.
Drew, thank you very much for coming before the committee and fielding the questions the way you have, and I thought you've done a very good job. If you don't mind, I'd like to have you back based on the request from Senator Kelly. Is that going to be a problem for you?
No, that's fine.
Thank you very much. I'll go ahead and Senator Wilcox.
I would request at that time that there be, will there be an opportunity for the public to comment on this?
Sure.
Nominee? Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. I have no problem with that. So with that, I'll discharge you to your day, and thank you for spending the time answering questions and for your willingness to work. Drew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to take up, we're going to set these aside, and we'll take them up later. At this point, we're going to take up Senate Bill 15, And by the way, I just want to mention that Senator Egan has been with us the whole time. I even mentioned it before we gaveled in. And then Representative Fansler has been here a good long while watching our proceedings and hoping to get, I think, HB 106. Is that what it is? And so we're going to do our dead level best to get that as quickly as we can. But Senate Bill 15, we have a CS. It's the R version, right? N version, I'm sorry. Sure enough, it's in the back. My apologies. So if you would, I don't have it here.
I do. I can move it.
You just have to know where to go. Senator, welcome to our committee. The great Senator. We're going to have a CS before Senator Stevens, and I'm going to have Jordan Schilling bring it before us, and then I'll have you comment on it, all right? Thank you, Senator Stevens. If we could have the motion to bring it before us.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill Number 15, Judiciary Version 30-LS0170/November before the committee.
And I'll object so that we can hear the changes. Senator, my staff will have Senator Staff Jordan Schilling. I knew I was going to get that wrong. Will bring us the changes, and please, Mr. Schilling.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. The bill makes a couple changes. As presented to the committee and as was our understanding of the intent of the sponsor, that this bill was designed to restrict the access to those under 19 to electronic smoking devices, e-liquids, e-cigarettes. And after speaking with legislative legal, it was our understanding that the bill may have inadvertently restricted access to e-cigarettes and e-liquids to adults, those over the age of 19. The CS version N before the committee removes the former Section 3 of the bill, Section 3 of Version R. By removing that section, it is clear that that the restriction does not apply to individuals seeking e-cigarettes that are over 19, not in the presence of a sales clerk.
Any questions on that? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stepped out of the room briefly, but you had mentioned to me that you wanted to limit the internet sales to age 19, which of course is the legal age for smoking. How do we verify age on internet sales?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I don't know how it's being done now. Currently, there's no law that prohibits e-cigarettes and e-liquids to be bought not in the presence of a sales clerk for individuals 19 or older. So that's existing law, and I might have to defer to one of the agencies to talk about how, if at all, e-cigarettes are regulated for adults right now.
I do have Angela Burt, who is the chief investigator for professional licensing with the Department of Commerce. Maybe that's a question she could answer. At any rate, she wanted to give some testimony to this particular bill. Is that in the target, Angela, or is that something else you wanted to talk about?
Thank you, Chair. No, sir. My name is Angela Burt. I'm with the Department of Commerce, and our tobacco enforcement is predicated on violations detected by the Department of Health and Social Services. And I think that question would be best addressed by Joe Darnell from that agency if he's on the call.
He is. Thank you, Angela. I appreciate you doing that lateral. Joe, and before I get to the sponsor of the bill, is that something that is easily discerned at this point in life? Mr. Darnell? Yeah, maybe he's on mute somehow. Joe Nardell, can you hear us? He's the investigator for the Division of Behavioral Health. Oh, he's in California.
Can you hear me now, sir?
Yes. I didn't realize you were in California, so the line was slow, but we got there.
Excellent. Through the chair, or to the chair, sorry, sir, can you specify specifically what your question is?
Yeah, the question is, how do we identify minors when they are buying something online and how would we enforce that?
Online, depending on which site you go into, they have age verification questions, and depending on which business is how deep it goes in, that is more, and I hate deferring it, but that's more of a tax question with Department of Revenue. They actually look into that more and regulate the online sales than we do here.
All right. Thank you. So I guess we'd have to do explicit language, Senator Meyer, from what I understand. For example, I understand there are ways that we could have packaging required to be signed for. There are a variety of different ways, but unless we want to go into the taxing question. Well, it's either that or we prohibit Internet sales across the board.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's kind of what I was that's where I was going, is that we, if the only way we can enforce the age limit is by taxing, then I guess we should look into that.
I'm game. I don't know that the sponsor necessarily wants to turn this into a taxing bill. Maybe we can get the sponsor to reply, and then we can go into further detail if you wish.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jordan. And let's go ahead and have the sponsor come before us. And I know this issue I brought before him, it's a tough one. So, because no matter which way you go, it's going to be hard to deal with. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Stevens, a senator from Kodiak. First, I'm glad to see you're all in such a good mood today to hear my bill. You've had a wonderful day so far, and here we go again. This bill is intended to be really very, very targeted and simple. The title of the bill is Restricting Youth Access to E-Cigarettes. That's what it's all about, restricting youth access. We have very little opposition to helping youth avoid access to e-cigarettes, and my staff, Tim Lamkin, has done a survey. It's not really scientific, but of all the principals that we talked to, 78% say that vaping is a problem in their schools. They said that secondhand smoke is a problem in their schools. They say that inhalation, 100%, it's a problem. And 97% believe that there's more to vaping than just water vapor and flavoring. So I think, Mr. Chairman, that there's a lot of support for this bill, which simply is to restrict youth from vaping. And I think that's a good thing to do. It's not a taxing bill. I don't really want to go to taxi bill. I think I'd like to keep it as simple as possible. I think we can do some good things for the young people in our communities by passing this bill as it is. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I know you've worked this and worked it hard, but it sounds like you would prefer that we not accept the CS and go back to the original bill. Is that correct, as the sponsor?
Well, let's see, Tim, you've been working with that, and he spent more time with the CS than I have. I'll ask Tim to respond to that.
Through the chair, for the record, Tim Lamkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, at this time, the CS is agreeable. The only possible hesitation is regarding the Section 3, but again, for reasons that you stated, that once we do start talking about interstate sales, it is problematic. That type of language is appropriately placed in the taxing code, and this bill is intended to set up the program and make it clear as regards youth access to these products, and we could potentially, and very appropriately so, perhaps appropriately so, visit the taxation questions in a different bill down the road.
Senator Meyer?
So, Mr. Chair, I apologize. I didn't hear the changes from the original bill to the CS. Is Section 3 the only change?
Yeah, that's the primary change. What we did was we said in the Internet sales, the forbidden is 19 and under, I think, under 19, right? And because the way it's written in the original bill, it would prohibit Internet sales for adults and youth alike. And I just wanted to have the discussion about if we're going to do it about youth, and then it begs the question, how do you enforce it? And it begs the question on taxation. I get that. But I just didn't want to have a blanket forbidding on Internet sales at this point, because that begs the broader question.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that, and I do know, and you're right, why should we discriminate to the adults who want to buy this online just to make sure that we're protecting our youth? But we've heard over and over through testimony and through the sponsor that this is primarily being used by the youth, if I'm correct. And so it concerns me then if the youth are the ones that are primarily vaping, they're the ones that we need to protect.
So, Senator Meyer, I don't know that we can say they're the primary users, but they certainly has been demonstrated that they are a target in advertising. But I think to say that adults who choose to do this, if it's for cessation or for any other use, we're into a whole arena that I think we need to have a different policy discussion on. And I want to make sure that if we're going to deal with the youth, that we deal with the youth, because it still leaves an open question. It's just how do we do it? And I leave it to the sponsor to help us answer that. But at this point, I would much rather say okay for youth and then move on.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, my concern is if we are trying to protect the youth, then you wouldn't want them to do internet sales because that's how they will buy it, and we know that the internet's, or we believe the internet sales are not checking for ID, so there'd be no way to prohibit the youth from getting access. That's my concern.
Senator Stevens, yes.
This is not the perfect bill. We can't stop adults from giving kids e-cigarettes, or can't stop the parents from giving kids e-cigarettes. And I'm not even sure we can even deal with the internet properly. So I think this will do good. It will help out. It's not the perfect answer.
And I think for me, this has a lot of journeys to go yet. And I wanted to beg the question and then move it on, if that's okay with the committee, unless you have other amendments. I could hold it over till Monday, but we have run ourselves right up to the end of session, and this is the best I could think to do. Any other questions? You can put amend on it.
Yeah, I probably will.
With that, what I'd like to do, Senator Stevens, with gratitude for you working with me, and I know I'm a little bit of a thorn in the side, but I'll have Senator Costello make a motion to move it, if you will, Senator Costello.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill Number 15, Judiciary Version 30LS0170/November from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
With that, we'll move Senate Bill 15, new version with the attached fiscal note, with the following concerns. So with that, we won't take a brief at ease, but we will sign up this document before we leave. So I'd ask people to stay here. I wanted to go ahead and get Senate Bill 100 laid out before us real briefly.
Thank you,
Senator. Thank you very much. And if I have Senator Egan here, who has the municipal liens and authority for to come and lay it out. And my apologies to those who came to testify on HB 106. It's just amazing how much an hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes can just poof dissipate. But we're gonna work on getting public testimony on, and then there will be amendment on Monday, so I won't close public testimony on it so that we can continue on. Monday, my intention is to bring it up, talk about any amendments, move it out. So, but I need the public testimony, and so several people have made their case for this. Senator Egan, welcome to our committee, and I wanted to make sure that you had a chance to at least lay the bill out before us, and then we'll just set it aside. But this is your time to give us your best opening statement on it.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thanks for hearing at such a late date Senate Bill 100. This is at the request of numerous city attorneys from across the state, including Anchorage and here in Juneau. Senate Bill 100 fixes an unintended consequence of a really good 1998 bill. Senator Tim Kelly stopped people from using bogus liens to go after elected officials and judges. What nobody realized was it stopped municipalities from using lien to collect what people owe the cities. Not tax liens. These are covered elsewhere in statute. But when a city runs a utility or has to abate a hazard, they may need or may need to record a lien. Senate Bill 100 puts the tool back in municipalities' hands, gives liens under muni law the same authority as state and federal law. And one other important thing, Mr. Chair, these liens don't jump the line. First in time, first in right. They don't jump over a mortgage or anything else that has been filed first. It's a simple bill, Mr. Chair and members, and I thank municipalities for asking me to sponsor this legislation. And I have my able staff, Jesse Keel, who has a lot of knowledge on this piece of legislation and is here to further present.
Well, we can open it up for preliminary questions. And what I'm going to do, because I've run ourselves aground almost time-wise, I'm going to set it aside and ask Kathy Wasserman and Amy Mead if they have any problem following us into next week to have public testimony on this. So, all right. Let's do that. So that I want you to have time. I don't want to rush you. And is there any questions that people need to ask at this point before we bring it back up before us? Senator Costello.
Thank you. Are you aware of anyone who opposes the bill?
No.
All right. So it's our job to find opposition. Is that what it is?
No.
Other than people who have liens.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Senator Egan. And my apologies for rushing and slowing down public testimony. But I did promise that I would give public testimony for another bill today, and I have cut them way, way short. Thank you, Jesse and Senator. And what we'll do is we'll bring it up at our earliest convenience next week, and we'll allow for public testimony at that point as well. Thank you very much. And so with that, we're going to set Senate Bill 100 aside at this point, with apologies to those who came to testify. And we're going to then bring up House Bill 106. And we do have the sponsor here. If you want to have any opening statements, recognizing the time. That's all, the time frame. I did want to get some public testimony online, and it looks like we probably have a few people.
First off, for the record, Representative Zach Fansler, Representative for District 38, serving Bethel and the Lower Yukon Kuskokwim Delta. And thank you very much, Chair Coghill, for allowing us this opportunity. I'll be rather brief so we can get to the public testimony. But essentially, we have a bill, HB 106, that provides a funding mechanism for the Civil Legal Services Fund, and its intent is to allow the legislature to appropriate up to 25% of the court filing fees from any given year, and that would be redirected to the Civil Legal Services Fund, which would go to actually fund Alaska Legal Services Corporation, a corporation that is vital to our state. And they represent all manner of civil cases around the state, and including a predominant number of cases that help veterans, that help victims and survivors of domestic violence, that help elders, and they are essential access points to those that cannot afford an attorney yet need to navigate the civil legal system. With that, I can take any questions that anyone has, or we can just turn it over to public testimony.
Anybody who's been in the legislature for any length of time has probably heard the issue come before them once before. Is there any questions at this point for the representative? Representative, if you don't mind, I will reserve further discussion with you because I did promise some people, one specific person, that he would be able to testify today. If I don't get to that, then I will have mud on my face for the rest of my life. So, and with that, if you want to sit by and listen to testimony, my intention is to bring this up again Monday. And then we'll go into the whys and wherefores of the actual committee issue at hand. So did that sound pretty good, Greg Rasso, who I'm going to bring up first, because it was you that I promised to give public testimony on. Are you there, and can you hear us? Put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Cocktail. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Very well.
You make me smile. I want to thank you and the other members of the Senate Judiciary Committee for hearing 106 today. My name is Greg Rasso. I am President and Chairman of the Board of Alaska Legal Services Corporation. ALSC is a nonprofit law firm that provides free legal help to low-income Alaskans and is dedicated to assuring access to justice for all Alaskans in our legal system. The HB 106 legislation is important. It's aimed at reducing Alaska's civil justice gap, and I support it. ALSC has been providing free legal help to those in need and striving to bridge the civil justice gap for 50 years. Let me tell you some true stories, just a couple, because I know you're short on time. When a 79-year-old grandfather who was caring for his grandchildren and feared the loss of his home because he was duped into taking out an illegal, predatory reverse mortgage on his house, ALFC was there to answer the call and make certain his family didn't end up on the streets. When a rural commercial fisherman had paid all of his savings to have an out-of-state mechanic repair his boat, only to have it catch fire after the repairs were completed, right in the middle of prime fishing season, ALFC made certain he recovered his lost fishing wages and his boat, making certain his family didn't lose their livelihood. When a veteran was denied VA benefits, even though he earned them through service to his country, and even though his disabilities left him homebound and unable to work in his rural community, ALFC took his case and made certain he received the benefits he had earned. ALFC provides services across Alaska. I probably volunteered my time to serve on the board of ALFC for more than 25 years. I do so because I wholeheartedly believe in the ALFC mission. I've seen firsthand how these lawyers can change people's lives. And I've also witnessed the bad results that happen when Alaskans can't afford to get the civil legal help they need. I joined the board when I was a small town lawyer in private practice in Kodiak, and I remained on ALFC's board as I moved to Anchorage and became a vice president here at SERI. In both of these capacities, I've seen the civil legal aid and the need for it impact it has on everybody who receives it. In all the cases I mentioned, there was a civil legal solution, but unlike in criminal cases where defendants are guaranteed a court-appointed attorney if they can't afford one, there's no such right in Alaska in civil cases. And so for those people and thousands like them, ALFC is their only option. In addition to testifying to how important these services are, I can attest to how fiscally prudent ALFC is and how they stretch their dollars as far as possible to serve as many clients as they can. The attorneys who work for ALFC are some of the best lawyers in Alaska, and they do this work as a form of public service. It's a labor of love for these lawyers. They're paid far below the market rate for private attorneys or state attorneys. A starting legal services lawyer in Anchorage makes only $44,000 a year. This is much less than they could make working for the state or at private law firms. These lawyers come from Harvard, from the University of Michigan, from UCLA, from NYU. Good law schools, and they choose to serve public service instead of high-paying jobs. ALFC also relies on a network of volunteers that runs the pro bono volunteer service for the state of Alaska and gets lots of private lawyers to volunteer their time. ALFC is incredibly successful when it goes to work and achieves positive results in 86% of its cases. And they resolve 80% of their clients' legal issues outside of court without having to go to court. On average, an ALFC case costs only $600. I support HB 106 because ALFC has helped 2,880 cases for over 650 6,500 Alaskans last year, although ALSC had to turn away 850 clients because they couldn't afford to do the work. There is a civil legal justice gap here in Alaska, and HD 106 can serve as a mechanism to deal with that.
Greg, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up only because I want a couple more people to testify, and you're too compelling for me.
Well, finally, we know there are tough economic times in Alaska, and it's difficult to make decisions about funding mechanisms. This is not a designated fund. It's a fund that already exists. It's a fund that's paid for right now through punitive damages. This will just allow one more funding source into that fund, so we can have some money to deal with this vast need across Alaska. Thank you, Senators.
Thank you, Greg, and I appreciate it. And it was actually Greg's arm twisting that got me to bring this up, because I so struggle of having a designated fund stream. But he was probably the person that was willing to, able to. And by the way, Nicole Nelson, who's the with the Alaska Legal Services, is online. She's listening to that. And so just to give credit to whom credit is due, those two have had a huge impact. Let's go to John Bioff in Querick, who's over in Nome right now, to let him give some testimony. John, are you online and can you hear us?
I am. Thank you.
You put yourself on the record. Give us your testimony on this bill, please. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Thanks for giving me this opportunity to testify in favor of HB 106. This Civil Legal Services Fund. My name is John Bioff, and I'm the General Counsel for Querick Incorporated. Querick is the nonprofit regional tribal consortium located here in Nome, and what we do is provide numerous social and other services to the Bering Strait region tribes and tribal members, and in some cases all residents of the region. I've been Querick's attorney for 15 years, and I've lived in Nome for 17 years, and during those years, I've worked very closely with Alaska Legal Services attorneys up here. LMSC provides a critical service to a large segment of our population in this region. Many families in this region rely on subsistence to survive, and there are very limited employment opportunities. So it follows that a large portion of the population in our region would not be able to afford a private attorney when they have a civil legal matter that requires an attorney. And LMSC has provided legal services to these individuals who would otherwise just be left without any other recourse. These services are fundamentally important issues that the rest of us who can afford to pay for private attorneys, we all tend to take for granted. And I've experienced times where ALSC has had an attorney based in our region and times where there has not been one. There's been times when the position has been open. And I can tell you based on my own experience over the years that there is truly a real gap that's left in this region without ALSC's presence and aid to the population here. So, HB 106, it provides a badly needed support to ALSC to help ALSC close that gap in the provision of basic, fundamentally important legal services in our region and around the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Bioff. I appreciate your time and that you've been on the line since 1:37, so greatly appreciate your time and your testimony. We're going to go to Nicole Borromeo, I think is how it's said. If I said it wrong, please correct me. You're in Anchorage. Put yourself on the record and give us some testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Conkill. It's Borromeo. Good afternoon, and good afternoon also to members of the committee. My name is Nicole Borromeo, and I serve as the Executive Vice President, General Counsel for the Alaska Federation of Natives. As you know, AFN is the largest statewide Native organization in the state. We represent 12 regional corporations, 12 for-profit, not-for-profit organizations, 152 village corporations, and 152 federally recognized tribes on matters of mutual concern when it comes to state and federal policy. We've had the pleasure of working with the Alaska Legal Services Corporation on a number of issues. I'll just bring one to your attention here because Greg has left some pretty big shoes to follow in terms of testimony. last legal services came to AFN a couple years ago when the state and the Native community found itself in an unfortunate legal matter concerning a Native child and the application of ICWA. And we had worked on different solutions on how we might rectify the two different positions and were able to, with their help and guidance and technical expertise, pass some emergency regulations and then change the statute last year as well. So this is a great organization that is doing tremendous work in the state. Every dollar that legal services get is a multiplier in terms of benefits that come to Alaskans, and not just the Native community, but veterans, seniors, and children. So please pass this bill quickly out of committee, because as you mentioned earlier, Mr. Chairman, we are running up against the clock here in time, in terms of time. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Nicole, thank you for taking time to testify on this and appreciate your patience. Is there questions? No questions at this point. Thank you very much. And we're going to go to Patrick Reinhart. And before I get to Patrick, let's do this. I've got some people in the room. Is there any, just after Patrick's done, just tell me of those who may not be able to get back Monday. I know none of us have a crystal ball, but if you can't get back Monday, let's go to Patrick Reinhart, who's in Anchorage at this point. Patrick?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Patrick Reinhart. I'm Executive Director of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. And I just want to call and support this bill. We've supported it in previous years. And primarily the reason why we're interested in this in terms of our beneficiary group is that many of the folks that we deal with utilize Alaska Legal Services for services, and they're incredibly vital to their ability to take care of issues such as, you know, access to housing, health care, access even to food, protection from abuse. So I'll just very quickly say we support the bill. We provided a letter of support for it, and we do hope you pass it out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick, for your time and testimony. I think probably at this point, it looks like Marie Darwin got here first. Marie, is there anybody here in the room that wants to testify that cannot or don't think they can make it back Monday? All right, so Marie, why don't you come on up and give your few minutes of testimony. And we do have Nancy Mead here for questions if there's any court system questions. And then probably what I'll go to is Carmen Lowry, and then we'll go to Denise if we can. All right. Marie, pull that microphone over so that we get you on record. Thank you very much. Give us your testimony.
Okay, my name is Marie Darwin, and I'm representing AARP, and I'm the coordinator of the Capital City Task Force, so that's why I'm up here every so often. I will not take your time to go through the letter of support that you got, which lists a lot of different reasons of our support for this important legislation, which we hope will make it through this session too, hopefully, because it does set up a more stable funding mechanism for the Alaska Legal Services, and you've already heard all kinds of support for it. Sure. And why, and I'm not going to go through all of that, although I could, but I won't. I will just remind you that with the increasing and ever-growing population of older persons, who are some that use these services very, very much, and are many times told that they cannot do anything for them because they do not have enough staff, that we really want to encourage you to support this so that it will give a better and more stable funding mechanism to the Alaska Legal Services, because it's desperately needed. And that's my testimony.
Thank you very much. Marie, can you come back Monday as well and be available for questions?
Sure.
Here's what I think I'll do, and with no disrespect, but great apologies to Carmen and Denise, I think I need to have a conversation with the sponsor as we move into the Monday meeting. So if that's okay with you, I wanted to make sure we got some public testimony on, and then why don't I call up Representative Fansler to let him know how I think we'll proceed, and then let him respond and maybe some questions. Thank you, Marie, very much for taking your time. Representative Fansler, if I could just have you before the committee. And I wanted to get some of that testimony online. This has been a tough issue down through the years. I just wanted you to know, both publicly and I'll even say it privately, we struggle with how to take care of our Office of Public Advocacy, our public defenders, and our prosecutors. And this sets up a designation. So it was said earlier that we do have funds already. Can you explain just the background on how they're funded now? Because there are, it's a national organization, but it also gets some pretty good state input. And maybe if you could explain, it looks like your staff has an answer. If you could at least give us some explanation on that, please.
Certainly, and I'll defer to my staff.
Thank you, Representative Fansler, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Maria Balkosov-Schlosser, staff to Representative Fansler. This is an Alaska organization, not a national organization. This organization was established in 1967 prior to the National Legal Services that you may be referring to, Senator.
So the question is, are you affiliated?
The only affiliation that the Alaska Legal Services has with the national organization, Mr. Chair, is that they do get a portion of funding along with many other private funds, and including our commerce grant of $450,000 and occasional punitive damages.
Okay. And so the funding stream that is happening presently from Alaska to Alaska Legal Services, can you just give us an explanation on that a little bit?
So it's through the Department of Commerce. It's $450,000. It's gone down. We had sent a memo to you and the committee regarding the last 10 years of funding. The last 2 years, it's gone down $100,000, whereas the caseload for Alaska Legal Service has increased, and steadily increased, actually, in the past 10 years. And while funding has gone down, so this, not at this time, would this bill come forward, it's more of a placeholder for less lean times when we have a more stable budget.
Thank you. And Senator Meyer has a question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, perhaps on Monday, too, we can talk to the courts and see how what would happen if they don't get the other 25% of the money. But you're absolutely right. You referred to this letter here that we received, looks like April 5th. That funding has gone down, but the caseload has gone up. So, what should I read out of that? I mean, it almost looks to me like the less money we gave you, the more work you're doing. But are you saying that there's more delays or not doing as good a job? Please explain.
And thank you for the record, Zach Fansler, Representative Zach Fansler, District 38. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, thank you for your question. That's an excellent question. Just to clear one thing up, and perhaps we can speak to this more on Monday, but it's my understanding that the court fees as they're collected right now do not go towards maintaining the court system. They go directly into the UGF. Mm-hmm. So this would not have an impact on the court system or their funding, but we can obviously have someone speak to that on Monday. To answer your question, I think what this is showing is you're seeing more need. We do have Ms. Nelson on the phone, and she can probably speak to that as well on Monday. But it's estimated that out of those 2,880 cases, that they turn approximately 50% of applicants away. So the need that we're recognizing right now is about half of the actual demand on the system, and that's coming because of a non-steady funding source that can allow them to reach more clients, really.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to thank you for kind of sitting through the whole committee and listening to kind of the deliberations. This is the bill I've never been supportive of, and just as a chairman, it's been tough for me to even bring it up, and I'll give Greg Razzo the credit for that. I will probably look for some way to amend it, because I feel that having a designated stream that's the size that you're asking for, given that we're actually cutting our public defenders and our prosecutors down, is going to be something I'm going to struggle with. So I'm going to do a little homework, and I will not try to blindside you, but I'll try to let you know what my intention is. Just as the chairman, you needed to know that if this goes over me, it'll be like a lawnmower going over my bald spot. It'll be cutting up real flesh. So I just wanted you to know that, and I'm not a big fan of this particular approach. I just wanted you to know that, and I will look for a way to express that in an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And anything our office can do to work with you to make you feel better about this, you know, in the bill itself, it states that this is not the intent to create a dedicated fund, but it does not indebt any future legislatures. They can always choose if they want 0% in lean times or up to 25% when there are better times for our state's fiscal situation.
That's a good point. I wanted you to be able to make that. So thank you very much. We're going to set the bill aside with the intention of taking it up Monday. All right. Thank you. With that, Senator Meyer.
Before you adjourn, were we supposed to sign the book on that?
Yes. Don't leave the room while we sign the book. So thank you. Representative Fensler, thank you very much. At this point, we'll be adjourned. Thank you.